This is 16.9 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 12 years, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon and into what stuff means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. You can listen to episodes online, get them off iTunes or Google Play, or subscribe using a podcast app. Whatever way you choose, they're free and there's a new one weekly. The 16.9 Podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported from the start by Jeremy Gavin and his team at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. The companies who do the infrastructure that gets screens in place and makes video walls look amazing are a huge part of the digital signage ecosystem, but they don't get all that much attention. One of the biggest, if not the biggest, is Chicago-based Peerless AV, which has been a huge part of digital signage for many, many years. Most people know Peerless AV for its mounting systems for digital signage displays and for video walls, something they do really well. But the company has also been doing outdoor displays, not just the enclosures, for more than a decade. The company had a big moment with its marketing about a year ago at Infocom, when it started very clearly and overtly saying, we do this and we do that. It's been working. The company had a killer Q4, and Q1 of this year was as good or better. I spoke about where Peerless AV is at with Brian McClymans, the VP Sales for North America and Asia Pacific. So Brian, happy Friday.
Yeah, you too. I'm pretty excited about it being Friday. It's tax day down here. It's tax weekend.
Oh, God. Have you got yours done?
Yeah, my wife has actually gotten it done. She's been crying for a month and I have to look through it because we owe about $5,000. She blames it on me and she blames it on Trump because I should have changed my withholdings.
It's the perils of being in the digital signage business. You just make so much money.
Yeah,
dead silence.
So. Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, sure. It's much more cutthroat than that here.
So I've wanted to do this podcast for a long time. I have this sort of thing in my mind. I don't know if it's fair or not, but I always believe the big mount and infrastructure guys like the Peerlesses of the world don't get anywhere near the respect they should because they're part of every digital signage installation out there. And, you know, particularly companies like Peerless, you guys are a huge contributor to all of the various events that go on, whether it's DSE, the big party there. But I mean, you're a supporter of all these other things. And, you know, I would say the display guys and the software guys get a lot more attention.
You know, it's funny you say that. We were just talking about that. Nick Belcourt and myself were highlighting that. We really have a great position. We can kind of quietly be a part of almost every opportunity in the space. And we're very good at being partners with all of the OEM suppliers, from whether it's DirectView LED, which is the new hot thing, but also with the displays and projector manufacturers. We've been involved in many major, from whether it's education opportunities that aren't digital signage to QSRs that are corporate signage, and also stadium signage. We do get involved in almost every opportunity that is out there. We get a look at it. We don't win them all, that's for sure. I mean, we have our fair share of competition, but the fact that we're able to be a part of all of those and you know, kind of speak to them really is helpful.
I went to CES about 1,000 years ago, like a decade ago or something, and walked around that show. And when you get off of the main booth areas and into the little side areas, you get the smaller guys. And at that time, there were any number of Chinese manufacturers there with mounting bracketry. And, you know, it seemed to be well made and everything else. And the costs, although they, you know, as usual, the Chinese manufacturers had people work in the booths who really didn't speak language very well or English very well. But I wondered at that time, how do the Chiefs and the Peerlesses and the Premiers and those kinds of companies compete with that? And, you know, years later, you're doing just fine.
It's been hard. I mean, it really is. It's even gotten harder now because, you know, many years ago, those same competitors had a bigger challenge because they would go to those trade shows. They would have to build a relationship with the customers that are in the space. They would have to find them, you know, find out who's the big volume user and, you know, get to know them. Now what they're doing is they're setting up shop on Amazon and other.com places, and they're just throwing it out there as fast as they can with, you know, screen ranges that they can hold, whether they're flat, tilt, articulating. They'll call them digital signage to get attention. And what they're really good at doing now is what I'd say is like really mining the whole Google Analytics and also social media. The amount of emails and LinkedIn people trying to connect even to us to sell us indoor mounts and outdoor mounts and outdoor displays is unbelievable. So I can imagine that anybody in this space, and I don't know where they're getting these names from, but they're finding us and they're sending, you know, 10 meg files that are unsolicited about how inexpensive their products are. So it seems today that they have even more opportunity to, you know, find the appropriate people in the space. Now, the good news is that it is still a relationship-based business and our customers are supporting us and working with us because it isn't really, and everybody knows that it isn't always just about price. It has to do with who's in the market, who's supporting you, because, you know, nowadays end users want to work with, you know, the one throat to choke, but they also want to know who else is involved in that process because they don't want to see anybody drop the ball on their product in their business because it affects that person's job because people have been fired over making bad decisions.
I would imagine you have a number of counter arguments starting with support. Do things like UL ratings or certifications come into play as well? Like, are there things that you guys have that are certified in a way that something that's coming from offshore would not?
Yes. And well, the biggest challenge is that offshore lies always. I mean, it's not sometimes, it's always about UL listing. The beauty about UL listing is you can look them up. You could actually go on to UL's website, and we constantly have to do this on projects where maybe we are the spec or the spec is that it's a UL rated solution, whether it's a cart, a stand, a mount, and a product will come in that's just, you know, 20-30% less expensive than everybody else's, and it'll say it's UL listed, but yet it's from overseas, and, you know, we start looking into it, and all we have to do is go onto the UL website and check it and verify that they, not only is that SKU not UL listed, the company that's providing that SKU has no products that are UL listed. But in their mind, they get the sale and they're done. And there's no support after the fact. And that really is challenging. There are people that have taken those challenges and those risks with the products. And, you know, in the end, they come back. I mean, we're aware of many projects that we get brought back into 5 years later where we're having to resolve some issues that they faced with going with the wrong product.
And what are the implications of something that purports to be UL listed but is not? Like, is it things like metal fatigue and that, you know, something's going to fall?
Absolutely, something is going to fall, and it has fallen in certain cases. Or if they sag and say you've got a video wall, a 4x4 video wall of LCD displays, and say the mount starts sagging over time because of heat or it just wasn't a sound product when it was manufactured. Sure, it looked like a good mount, but after a while being up there, it's not holding its levels. Now you have a 4x4 LCD video wall display that cannot be level. You know, they're just, you know, the corners aren't, you know, it's all out of alignment. And then the worst case is when it really starts sagging, they start breaking glass because, as you've seen, you know, as DirectView LED is really starting to come down in price and starting to try and replace some of the LCD video wall opportunities that are less expensive, the manufacturers like LG and Samsung and NEC have gone to such really tight and thin mullions on the sides of their LCD displays for video walls. They need the mount to hold that product literally right next to the one to the right and the left and right next to the one on the top and the bottom, but not resting on them. And so the mount has to be perfect and hold in place so that it doesn't put extra weight on the one below it, because they will break the glass. And we have seen that happen quite a bit. And there are several of those projects out there right now that, you know, displays are being replaced and mounts are being replaced.
Yeah, I've heard that the bezels on the super duper extremely narrow, whatever description they want to use, bezels that the major manufacturers have out there, that they're, you know, they're beautiful. It makes it really, really thin, but those bezels are so thin that they're incredibly fragile.
Yeah, they literally have to the point of, I mean, they're as thin as like a aluminum can, the bezel that's around that glass. And so that bezel is not strong enough to hold the weight of the display. So the mount has to do that, and it has to hold it there perfectly and keep it tight within, you know, less than a millimeter thick distance between them. Because I will say, I'm pretty impressed with some of the LCD displays, video wall displays that are out now, and how tight they are with those bezels, because they do look really good.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of that has to do, I mean, you've walked me around the Peerless booth, and I've, you know, talked to other major manufacturers, and, you know, at first blush, they all kind of look the same. But once you start to get the explanations of the micro adjustments that you guys do so that you do have these very tight seams and the four corners joined together properly, when you start to really look around in retail and so on, you see stuff that's, you know, where it either doesn't have those micro adjustments or the integrator didn't use them, but you can definitely see the difference.
That is for sure, as well as the ability to get behind them after they've been installed. That is, I think that is the one true benefit that LCD has over DirectView LED, is the fact that you can get behind them relatively easily if you use the right mounting product, whether it's a pop-out solution that you would push on the front of the glass to pop it out and release it, or if you reach behind and below and above, you can actually get to the backside of the display to change out, you know, inputs, media players, and such. Yes, you can do that with DirectView LED with the magnetic releases of them, but now you're really talking about fragility of a product that's very expensive. Because, you know, when you pop out the magnet of the module for the LED, if you've got a 1.2 or less than 1 millimeter pixel pitch module, you could literally be holding $10,000 in your hand that's only, you know, 6 inches square. And if you push that back in and get that back in and you pop just at one LED pixel out, boy, that's a, who's going to have to replace that?
Yeah, it's big repair cost.
Yep.
And even if you have a front serviceable LED, you can only service the module. You can't really, you can't pull out the cabinet from the front, right?
No, you can't pull the cabinet out, but I will give the credit to the DirectView LED manufacturers. I've seen, and I'm sure you've seen it as well, I know you went and toured some of the factories over there. The changes, the advancements that the DirectView LED manufacturers have made to the cabinets, the modules, the cost, and in the past 3 years is mind-blowing how fast they've come down and how quickly they've gone from rear serviceable to front serviceable, and just the things that they can actually change out. So it's getting there. It's getting pretty good. I think that this year, 2019, is the really make it or break it year where DirectView LED needs to really, you know, see its life and take on the volume that it has the potential for, or, you know, and then LCD needs to still maintain what they're in for their capabilities. Maybe there's a way for them to have a happy medium of, you know, LCD video wall displays being in a smaller sizes, maybe up to 3x3, and then LED be the crazy, you know, ginormous ones. I've just had, you know, for DSC, I don't know if you noticed this, but do you remember the 100 screen LCD video wall that Samsung put in just before CES about 10 years ago? Maybe it was named 10, maybe it was 8 years ago. That thing is still up there running. And the thing I was shocked by is it hasn't been replaced by DirectView LED yet. But then as I was coming down off of the D terminal and taking the tram over to the baggage claim, I was shocked when I saw all of the DirectView LED getting put into that during DSC. So I think it's just a matter of time before those get transitioned from LCD to DirectView LED at that airport.
Yeah, Lamar spent a couple of bucks at the main terminal.
Oh, yeah.
Holy crap.
I wonder if the advertising rates went up to pay that off.
Yeah, you know, you were talking about LCD video walls and the tight bezels, and it's always been my point of view, and I'm curious about your point of view, is the bezels are so narrow now that the grid lines are really indistinct. And if you do content properly, you barely see them. So I don't always understand the offense that designers and I guess their end user clients take with the idea of, LCD-based video walls because they're still a hell of a lot cheaper and, you know, the visuals are beautiful.
I'm 100% in agreement with you. I mean, if you're, you know, cost-effective and really looking at what your spend is, the LCD bezels are so tight, those would be the most economical and best solution for you right now. Yes, in the future, in 3 to 5 years, you know, DirectView LED is going to be at the price point where it's either parallel or less than LCD video walls. But you're right. If you were to spend your money right now and you want something to last 2 or, you know, say 3 years, LCD would be the way to go right now. But if you need it to last 10 years and you want it to be, you know, future-proof, then DirectView LED is the way to go. And I guess we as humans, we all want the newest, latest, greatest products if you've got the money, you know.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that, and then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
Do the integrators out there all understand the value of front serviceability and the perils of having something that is only service from the rear? Because you would think they'd know that, but I wonder if they do.
I don't think they do. I think if you were in a room of 100 integrators and had them raise their hand and ask the question, how many of you have actually held one in your hand and installed one? I think you would get less than 10% of the people in the room that would raise their hand. And vice versa, if you say, how many of you installed an LCD video wall or had your hands on one? I think you'd probably have 100% raise their hand. So I think right now, everybody's quoted by it. They're allured by it. They want that product. But the challenge is they have to first find the right customer that is willing to spend that extra money on the DirectView LED. But then I think there's a lot of people that are learning as they go. And, you know, we face that quite a bit with trying to work with our integrators to do installations. So we're offering project management services where we fly out our project manager or an engineer to help assist in the installation of it to make sure that they don't have any bad experiences. And I know most of the DirectView LED manufacturers also send somebody from their end to make sure that the cables are connected correctly, that they understand, you know, how to light it up. So I think there's a lot going on right now where people are learning. We're really in the early stages. I think it was, you know, 2018 was really, really infant stages of projects that are going out there. I think 2019 is where we're seeing, we've actually already done more business in DirectView LED in the first quarter of this year than we did all of last year. So it's happening fast, but it's still nowhere close to the size of, I guess, square footage that we would say if you were to, it'd be an interesting thing is to kind of measure the pure square footage of LCD displays that are sold. Because, you know, how do you compare the two, right? Because it's got to be about, you know, surface area. So I wonder if somebody could actually do some studies on what the surface area differences are between what's being sold on DirectView LED versus LCD. I still think LCD beats it 10 times in square footage size, as far as how many you're selling.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was going to ask, I've heard for, let's say, the last 3 years that it was going to be about 5 years for LED to kind of roll over and take over from LCD in terms of the video wall market. And I was curious if that's really happening and what the acceleration is, but obviously it's moving pretty quick now.
It's moving quick, but it's got a lot of room to grow. I've been predicting it's the year 2020 where that parity happens, but I hadn't put the thought together about the surface area square footage, because that's something we got to figure out how to measure that. Maybe what we do is there's reports out there about how many video wall displays are sold by the screen size. So we have to figure out how to measure that and multiply that by the diagonal, and then also figure out the square footage of DirectView LEDs that are sold and see, you know, where that's at. Because it really comes down to that surface area.
Yeah, big job.
Yeah, it is. Sounds like a good job for you.
No, let somebody else do that.
I don't know whether it was last year at Infocom or DSE, one of those shows, you had the Peerless AV booth segmented where the front of the booth was your outdoor display business and the back was the more conventional, if you want to call it that, mounting infrastructure business. And as we were talking, you're explaining to me that Peerless has had a challenge and is trying to resolve that challenge of the end user community, the ecosystem out there, understanding that, hey guys, we do more than mounting infrastructure. We do outdoor displays. You know, we're into a number of things. Is that working? Are people understanding it now?
It was like a light bulb finally went off at Infocom. It was at Infocom last year that we did it that way. We tried to do it at DSE this year. It just didn't, our booth space was just too small and it was a little bit more challenging. But we're going to do it again at Infocom because it was an amazing eye-opening experience for, us to finally see that, for so many years we've been standing on the mountaintops and rooftops of cities and yelling that we're more than just mounts. And we just wonder why the voices never were heard. And it really rang true at Infocom when we segmented the booth in half with the green carpet for the outdoor products and the gray and black carpet for our traditional, cart stands, projector mounts, and mounting solutions, things in kiosk, indoor kiosks. And we were just shocked at how many people walked into our booth and literally looked at us and had to look up at our sign and wondered, are they in a Peerless AV booth? And say, well, I didn't know that you did outdoor TVs. And it just shocked us to finally see that they finally heard us or saw us for who we wanted to be seen as. And it was awesome. It really was. And it has transitioned. So, last year was a very interesting year for most of the people in the space, from the first quarter being soft to the second, third quarters kind of picking up. But then the fourth quarter just skyrocketed. And we've just been on this growth path ever since. And I don't know if it's because the industry finally saw us for who we are, or do we have the right products that people are looking for at the right time. But everything seems to be clicking right now.
That's great. You can afford your big party then.
Yeah. It is nice. It's fun. It's been a good time. And we have heard many of the people, and I think you even wrote about it, that your ears were ringing for the next day or two. Mine were too. We're going to work with that next year. I think for some reason, as the night went on, it got louder.
Yeah, I'm too old for that stuff, but it's always interesting to pop my head in and go, oh dear. In terms, when we walked around Infocom, I kind of knew that you did displays, but I made the assumption that you guys were doing kind of the metal fabrication and kind of making a kiosk or enclosure that other companies, the display manufacturers, could use. But I learned in walking through there that you guys are heavily invested in the full manufacturing process. Like, you're doing the R&D around outdoor display, high bright display, ventilation, cooling, all that stuff. I had no idea that you were that deep into it.
Yeah. And that's exactly what we've been trying to figure out, as to how to get that knowledge out there for people, that, because we still do have people come in and they ask us if we can put any display in our enclosures. And it's challenging because, we can't get angry. We have to explain to each person, what we do. And it was in 2005 that I asked every one of the major OEMs that make TVs and make displays. And I said, when are you going to get into the outdoor market? And they all said, never. It's not a big enough market for us. We don't, see it as an opportunity for us. And at that time, we had been making enclosures for plasmas, LCDs, and prior to that, CRTs. So we were heating and cooling indoor TVs outdoors for, at that time, 10 years. And we were averaging anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500 enclosures a year. And we're like going, well, that's, we started adding the numbers up. And he said, well, if they're not going to do it, then we're going to do it. And so we worked on that from 2005 to 2008. And we basically started a new division of our company under a different brand to, see how it would go. And we created this product that was completely IP68, because we knew what are the biggest failure points of enclosures outside in the elements. It's that if you put a fan or a filter in there, it needs to be cleaned. It needs to be maintained. it needs to be monitored. Well, the biggest problem with that is end users, you know, they don't want to have something they have to worry about. And once the integrator sold it to them, you know, did they set up a maintenance program to clean that and do that ongoing? In many cases, not. So what we ended up figuring out is if we started off with a, you know, LCD panel, a raw panel, what did we need to do to robust it with our electronics to both heat and cool it? Some of our original designs actually had heating rods built into the cabinet to, you know, keep it hot during the summer. But, you know, the beauty is as these displays get brighter, they're producing more heat. So we don't need to actually heat them so we can reduce the overall electricity usage. So our newest designs don't have that in it. We actually use, you know, some thermal transfer devices and robust electronics that can live and breathe in the environment without having to have fans or filters, which is, and at actually really reduced electricity. So we literally believe that we can save over the life of our displays versus displays that have fans or filters, well over $1,000 per display in electricity savings by going with a product that doesn't have that. And so we spent millions of dollars in R&D developing these products. These things are, they don't exist in anybody else's portfolio. We design these specifically for us and for our customers. And in fact, we have some really great high-profile customers like Disney and Kennedy Space Center that have had our products still running that are 6 and 7 years old without any failures. I mean, without any failures, zero, in Orlando and, you know, in NASA. And when they got a view of the 2,500 nits and they got them in their hands, they literally said, oh my God, these are amazing. We believe so much in these. We're going to replace all of the 700 nit ones that they have. And we're talking hundreds of these things at their places of business. And they're going to repurpose the 700 nit displays because they're still working. And they're going to just put the 2,500 nit ones in place of those and put those elsewhere. So they believe in them that much that they've just said, we're going forward with these. So that's the best testament to see that what we've created is something that the end users need.
Is that, I'm curious, the outdoor display business that I've seen to date seems to be, on one hand, driven by out-of-home media companies for street furniture and drive-through displays for fast food. But it sounds like you've found your own kind of niche in entertainment facilities, attractions, that sort of thing.
Yep. Entertainment facilities, stadiums, as well as transportation, trains and bus stops, because those are dirty environments that need something that doesn't have to be maintained, like cleaning, fans or filters. So we've done very well on that. Unfortunately, the QSR space has, up until now, I believe, wrongly looked at outdoor displays. They look at it as, in many cases, the QSR spend less than $3,000 for a static menu board. And when they look at spending $15,000 on a digital menu board, they just look at it as, they look at it incorrectly. They look at it purely as a cost-to-cost savings or increase. They are not looking at the operational efficiencies. They're not looking at the increased revenue that they can have, as well as the relevancy to their customers. And I actually just posted something. I was amazed that during DSE, that a story came out that McDonald's invested $300 million into a company that was literally going to help them revolutionize digital menu boards in their business. And they've been doing digital
for the analytics, yeah,
indoors for 5 years and outdoors for the past year. So they, in all seriousness, we actually were one of the first people that tried to get McDonald's into the drive-through menu board solutions. We had two different test products that were 6-7 years ago, and they decided not to go forward with it. But they did their due diligence and studied it, and now that they've rolled it out, oh, they're so far ahead of everybody else in the space of what they're doing. And I'm telling you what, they're not spending $300 million on a software if they don't believe in the product that it's growing their sales. They're not looking at it as just a pure, you know, cost increase for, you know, just to show up, you know, to sell a burger. It is increasing burger sales. It is increasing accessory sales. It is increasing, you know, customers' happiness with them. And I think all of the other QSRs that have pushed back are literally sitting back. And I know there's one QSR in the space that said they would never go digital. Actually, we've got two that we're actually working on digital projects for as we speak. And yet they attended DSE 2 and 3 years ago and said they'll never go digital. Well, guess what? They're going digital.
They're gone. Yeah, I would imagine that's a tough vertical simply because, with some exceptions, most of these QSRs are owner-operated and you're not getting head office to buy the drive-through displays and have this big capital investment. It's, you know, the guy with two burger stops in Champaign, Illinois that, you know, you're trying to get on board with it and they're saying, I'm not spending $30,000. I don't have $30,000.
Yeah. I mean, there are some challenges with that. We actually have seen the operators that have 5 to 10, they're the ones that are jumping into this pretty quickly. And they're willing to say yes quicker to these opportunities rather than the big conglomerates that need, you know, decisions by committee out there.
Yeah, that's true. So we're 2 months out now from Infocom. What, when people walk into the Peerless AV booth, are you going to be steering them towards, you know, when they say, okay, haven't seen you guys for a year, show me your latest, greatest pots and pans, where are you going to take them to?
Well, we're going to continue. I mean, one of the challenges that we need to do is continue with the storyline that we started last year at Infocom in Las Vegas. So we will continue to spin the message that we are an outdoor display manufacturer, also for, you know, smart city kiosks. We can integrate other people's outdoor displays into our kiosk, as well as we have several new solutions for motorized carts and stands for the education space, because we've seen just unbelievable growth in that area as well, with large format displays replacing projectors in classrooms with interactive touch. And the schools want the ability for any height student or teacher to be able to do that touch screen. So some of these projects are 7 and 10,000 units for a school district. So that's an area that really continues to focus well on it. Hospitality is also a very strong area for our business, and there's going to be a very strong hospitality push within Infocom this year, and so we'll have some hospitality products that we don't typically have at that show. So those are some of the key things, as well as some of our capabilities with our direct view LED to be able to handle curveball applications, 90-degree bends on corners, and just all sorts of different applications in that space.
Mm-hmm. Just last question. Peerless AV is based in Greater Chicago area, right? How many people do you have there, and globally, how many people are there within the company?
So we have about 300 people here in Chicago, just outside of Chicago in Aurora. And then we have two locations outside, one in Monterey, Mexico, and one in Watford, UK. And so our Watford office handles all of our EMEA and, you know, that UK territory. We are just doing so fantastically over there. It's unbelievable. So total, I'd say we're about 400 employees globally.
Okay. All right. So next time, I guess, well, I've got a DSF board meeting. I'll see you there, but I will, and lots of people will see you guys at Infocom, right?
Yes, they will.
All right. Thank you, Brian.
All right. Thank you.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around for more than 2 years. You can click around the archive and find more than 100 conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9 at 16-9.net. There are now more than 6,000 posts in there about this industry. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside beautiful, amazing Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.